I thought I'd make a little fun of you, man.
Hey, you know what? It's good for our health. We like to have fun on this show, and I tell you what, I think you would have made more fun of my hair if you would have seen it without without the beanie.
I do make fun of your hair a lot. I make fun of Ben's hair a lot.
I see Reedy's in here. Reedy, what's going on, brother? Great to see you.
Hey, Reedy.
Lisa is up on Facebook. Hello, Lisa. Great to see you. It's so good to see everybody. We're pumped to get the new year started. We know this is a Wednesday. The normal time of the show is Tuesday at 7, so we'll be back to regular time next week. Doc, how's your day, man?
We went on a trip for the week after Christmas, the whole family, Ben included, and we just flew in last night late, so that's why we're doing it on Wednesday. But we had a great little break. I was really happy to get back at work. I realized that I love my job, and I look forward to coming back. And, you know, I just have a fortunate job situation that I love. So,
I know.
Anyway, how was your day? My day was great. Very busy. Very, very busy, but great day.
My day was fantastic, and it got even better because I see Lisa shared our broadcast. Thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing the show. You know what, Katie? Katie's in here. I almost went downstairs to my car to get my performance medicine beanie for this very reason, and I ran out of time. Next week, I'll have to showcase the performance medicine beanie. It's way cooler than this.
Now you're calling it a beanie. Well, you know, how about a boggin?
It's a beanie toboggan. You know, is it six?
Tomato,
year?
Tomato. Who cares?
Montana, it's so great to see you. Thank you for hanging out this evening. I know you guys had a busy day back in the West Knoxville office. I see Joy's here by way of Lisa. Thank you, Joy. Joy, we're so glad to have you in to the live Q&A show. As you guys know, if you're a regular, we take live questions. We're going to go over a few that came in throughout the week. And I'm also going to have an eye over on Instagram as well. So if you guys on Instagram have a question for Doc, go ahead and put that in the comments. But speaking of work, let's talk a little bit about this. This is in regards to the Common Sense MD episode with Andy Rogers. Today on the podcast, you mentioned that people probably should not retire until a much later age, as that seems to play a role in longevity/anti-aging. Yikes. Question is, my husband plans to retire very soon at a very young age. Do you think as long as they are staying busy with a very mental and physical hobby, golf, lots of golf, daily exercise, traveling, reading, is that okay in that scenario? I'm sure there's lots of people in here thinking similar things. Why don't you give us some context around kind of some of your thoughts around working and longevity?
That's a great question, you know, great comment. Yeah, you know, Andy went to the annual Longevity Fest out in Las Vegas. The keynote speaker was Dr. Oz, and he mentioned that he thought that they should push the retirement age back a little bit. But really, it's an individual thing. I mean, you know, if you love your work, then it's not like work. You know, just like I was saying about my job, I enjoy it. It doesn't seem much like work to me. It feels more like a purpose. And I think maybe that's the key, is a purpose. You know, a lot of people don't have a purpose really that they see as fulfilling. A lot of people work because, you know, just to earn a paycheck. And other people may take the road less traveled and create their own business or go independent like I've done in the medical world, which isn't easy, but it's very gratifying. You know, you like to do things like you like to do them. So, you know, personally, I'll be 69 in a couple weeks, and I don't plan on retiring until somebody tells me I have to or I need to. And, you know, a lot of it for me is just, I think that, you've been practicing medicine for so long, and you, if you really enjoy it and you really like researching, reading, and talking to patients and helping them out with their aging, you know, it doesn't seem like work to me. It just seems like almost like a purpose or calling or a mission, whatever you want to call it. But certainly some people who worked, say, like in a normal job where you're working for somebody else and you can't wait till the weekend and you dread Mondays, and you probably should retire or do something different. I find a lot of people retire and then they get tired of playing golf every day, and they come back as a consultant or get a new hobby. So I think the key is having a purpose. And like you and I, this brings up a good little point. Like you and I were eating lunch with one of our good friends down in Florida, and he is a very learned, wise gentleman that we really cherish our friendship with. And he brought up, because we start talking about the new year, you know, what should your goals be in the new year? And he said something that really, I really identified with. And this is the way I try to treat my, not only my business, my personal life, but also my interactions with patients. So there's three things you need to ask yourself. Number one, assess where you are right now. You know, what's your situation right now? You know, and be honest. It has to be an honest assessment. So where are you right now? And you may want to take input from other people that know you, but where are you right now? Number two, where do you want to be? You know, where would you like to be? And number three, start planning out the steps to get there. So you can't make a game plan or make a resolution until you really know where you're at and what you want. And then you build the steps to get there. So I think that was really, really good advice. And it plays into my role with patient interactions, my own role as a person, you know, the growth you want to experience. And certainly if you have a business, it's a great business model as well. Yeah, congratulations on retirement. You know, everybody's a little different. I have a surgeon brother who's 6 years younger than me, and he's been retired for 5 years. He loves it. He does farm work. He has bees. He has flowers. He builds furniture. He loves it. Absolutely loves it. So you certainly can enjoy it. So, you know, that, and most people, to be honest with you, look forward to that as early as they can. You know, a lot of it depends on what you do and what your purpose is. A lot of people's purpose is not in their job. It's really in their other life. And but I do find if there's something you can do to help people out, it's gratifying. I think that keeps you going. I think you age better if you're very active, if you read a lot, if you talk to other people. One of the most risky factors for aging poorly is social isolation. So stay involved and talk with people. So that's kind of a long answer to that, but retire when you're ready to do something different. And that's certainly a good game plan. But see, assess where you are as a person, as a worker, you know, and then assess, you kind of think, where do I want to be? And then take some steps to get there. It's possible.
Yeah, so. I love the question and I love your answer. And I know that you're, you know, you see, you know, patients who have retired every single day, and they're still going strong. And, I like to think that there are seasons in life, and you know, say you retire earlier than some, you're going to have another season, and figuring out what your next season's going to be is important. So
most people enjoy it. Most people do enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you for that question, and Doc, thank you for that answer. It's something that we'll probably keep talking about, because keeping a purpose even after work or a career is very difficult. Everybody or lots of people go through it. So we'll have to keep talking.
You may be even healthier after you retire. Depends on your job, but you got to move. That's one of the main things. You have to move.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going here. I'm going to go to this question. One, because I read it and I had no clue what it was, so I'm anxious to figure out what this is. Question is, came over Instagram. Hi, HSCRP 3.8, not cardiac, clean diet, no symptoms. Where would you start looking for cause? First of all, did I pronounce everything right?
Yeah, I think you did. The HSCRP is just a highly specific C-reactive protein is what it stands for. But it's a measure of inflammation. It's not really real specific, even though it says it is, but it's not. I see it all the time in people that don't have cardiac disease. That's the first thing you want to rule out is cardiac disease. And, you know, that's not a terribly high CRP. I see them way higher than that every day. But if you've had a negative cardiac workup and you don't feel a lot of inflammation in your body, say like arthritis, a lot of people that have arthritis or any kind of inflammatory condition will probably have an elevated CRP. So arthritis is something to think about, joint health, muscle health. But, you know, what I start looking at, if you're no symptoms, I start asking about your gut. You know, you may not have if you say no symptoms, you might not have any GI issues, but you may. You know, if you have a lot of gas, bloating, heartburn, irregularity, those type things, that imbalance of your microbiome, your gut microbiome, then certainly that could be something to look into. So at that level, I wouldn't freak out at all. It's not a major thing. Hopefully your other inflammatory markers are okay and you're not having any symptoms. And, you know, the CRP can change. So you might just want to get it rechecked in a few months and just see where it is, compare it to before. Some foods can inflame you a little bit too, like sugar, glutens, dairy, nightshades, soy, corn. They can certainly affect that. So you may have an imbalanced microbiome. You could have a little arthritis. A lot of it depends on your age. So it's not a freak out measure by any stretch. You know, generally we like to see it one or below, but it's not too unusual at all to have that level.
Thank you so much for that question. Great answer there, Doc. Huge shout out to Digestio. I see Steve's in here. Digestio, of course, is the probiotic we love. There's more than just the probiotic in there, but thank you so much for that question. We're going to keep moving here. This one is, I have a new multivitamin that actually has 100 mcg of MK7 in it. So would you think I can count that reliably towards my 180 mcg per day and just add another 80 to it? So this is in regards to vitamin K.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they say the ideal is 180, but if you're getting vitamin D and you're getting MK7, which is the best form of vitamin K2, then that's probably adequate. You know, I wouldn't freak out about it. I wouldn't go to the expense of taking another 80 milligram of MK7. You might even want to get Dr. Rogers' multivitamin that has 180 of it in there, along with 5,000 of D and 1,000 of C. It's got the Delta E, the A. I mean, it's pretty loaded. That's why I made it. So that had the right doses of things in it, copper, zinc, all that. So don't freak out. I wouldn't go to the trouble of doing that. I really wouldn't. I'd be satisfied with 100 micrograms of that. You know, next time you may want to get one that's, look at your multi, compare it to the one I had made. I mean, the one that I had formulated in Oregon is pretty packed. I'm betting it's better than what you've got. But anyway, maybe, probably is if you look at the ingredients of it, but anyway, so don't freak out about that.
All right. Thank you so much for that question. Came through email. I see Rachel's in here. I just want to give a shout out to Rachel. I see Montana, Katie, Carter's in here. Thank you guys so much. We've been closed for, we were closed the last week of December. Everyone in our office, these last 2 days has been super, super busy, getting back with patients and also having a ton of patients in office. So huge shout out to the entire performance medicine team. We really do appreciate you guys, and thank y'all for, taking the time to be with us tonight. Let's keep moving here. Let's see. I got a, salt question. I've heard for a few years that the pink Himalayan salt was better if you have high blood pressure. Yeah. I bought it sometime back, but had not looked at the back. Seems it's just as high in sodium as any other salt. While searching and reading about it, I stumbled across some articles about Boulder salt. So the question is about Boulder salt. Seems it's lower in sodium and higher in minerals than other salts. Has Dr. Rogers heard of this? If so, what's his opinion? If you need me to go back to anything, let me know.
Yeah, I think it's good. I have read about it. I haven't tasted any of it. But yeah, it's probably better. Again, I wouldn't freak out too much about salt and high blood pressure. Again, but today I had a patient, I actually lowered their salt content a little bit because they had a lot of two things. One, borderline hypertension, and two, they had dizziness. So, you know, sometimes when you have a little inner ear imbalance, whether it be benign positional vertigo or just a little plain vertigo caused by a virus or aging, I hate to say that, but those salt crystals in your inner ear can flake off and get in that semicircular canal, the fluid, the endolymphatic fluid, and cause a little dizziness. So I actually cut her sodium back a little bit. In general, you know, the sea salts are they're not refined, so they have all the other minerals in them, and they're better. And there's nothing magic about pink Himalayan. It's probably not the best one. It's certainly better than, you know, the salt you're going to get, refined salt you're going to get in most places. But I like Redmond's Real Salt. That's it, and it's a white salt. It's not pink. But Boulder apparently is pretty good. So that may be a good option for you, especially if you have a little borderline hypertension. But because about 20% of people will kind of be affected by sodium intake, but it's way overdone. You know, salt is actually a good thing for most people. So most people don't have enough of it, in my opinion. But, you always got to look at your potassium levels and that sodium-potassium ratio. So
yeah, that it's a great question, and you know, something that comes up a lot with, you know, sodium.
See how you feel on it. Yeah. See how you feel on it.
All right. That came in over email. Thank you so much for that. Real quick, I want to give a shout out to Jasmine, our esthetician in the West Knoxville office is here. Yeah. Seems she's done some magic with Molly. I see Ernie's in here, the PT, over
Ernie's
in our Kingsport clinic.
Hey, Ernie.
So glad to have you in here, Ernie. Thank you for hanging out with us. And I see Joy's got a great question around stretch clinics. I'm glad Ernie's in here for that. We got get to talk a little bit about stretch clinics. Let's get to a couple more questions, and we'll take live questions. If you have a question here for Doc, go ahead and put in the comments. And I'm looking at Instagram as well. So if you have questions, go ahead and put them in. This is a hormone question. Do you think that even if you started BHRT a little after menopause, 2 to 3 years after, that you still get the cognitive protection, or is it that only really applicable if you're on the BHRT at the actual time of menopause? Very common question, and you know, we talk a lot about hormone therapy. You know, when to get on it. I think typically your thoughts are get on it sooner rather than later. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Sooner is better, but you know, gosh, anytime. You know, I put people in their 80s on it all the time. So, yeah, I mean, the earlier probably the better, especially more for bone loss than anything, but certainly it's still great for you in most conditions, you know. So you need to kind of take it and not worry about if you've missed a couple years. Like I say, I put people on it late when they've already lost a lot of bone. But cognitive function is something that I think really is beneficial with bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. You know, read Dr. Pam Smith's book on, you know, all about women's hormones is a great book. So, no, it's not too late at all. Most people that come to us are going through menopause and you know, we happily put them on it all the time at that age. No problem.
All right. Thank you for that question. We love talking around hormones and timing and, you know, one, because we know a lot of people in here are thinking that. So thank you for sending that question in. Joy's in here on Facebook. Hello. I see Robbie's in here. Robbie, what's up, man? Leanne, great question there. We're going to get to that in just a second. This is a word I hear a lot, but can barely spell, and that's erythritol. And the question is, what are your thoughts on erythritol? Can it cause stroke or damage to the heart?
Yeah, it's a sugar substitute. And there's a couple interesting things about it. And again, we thought years ago, it's a sugar alcohol. And even though it's a sugar alcohol, it really does help prevent cavities. That's probably the only good thing it does.
Huh.
You sense that it's about 1,000 times sweeter than sugar. So like most artificial sweeteners, it can cause insulin resistance. So, but the thing about it is, besides the harmful effects with gas, bloating, diarrhea, I don't like erythritol. And now they're finding out through a fairly large study. I'm trying to remember. I think it was over 4,000 people in the study, because I read it recently. And the incidence of heart disease and strokes were statistically higher than not taking it. So, yeah, I wouldn't take it. So you have to worry. A lot of times you get stevia, which is a fairly good one. It's not my favorite, but a lot of times they'll put erythritol in there as well to make it even sweeter, because raw stevia, which is the best form of it, sometimes tastes a little bitter, has a bitter aftertaste. So I don't like it. And now that these studies have come in, it just proves it. It's not good for you. You know, just like some of the others are really bad for you. Splenda, saccharin, aspartame, they're all terrible for you. The only ones I really like are, you know, stevia in the raw. It's pretty beneficial. Has some other good side effects. Monk fruit is not a bad one. Allulose is pretty good. They're all really low on the glycemic index. They're not going to bump your sugars up. But yeah, so stay away from that if you can.
That's a great question. And if anybody wants to go further into sweeteners, specifically healthy sweeteners, we did a Dive Into Diet episode with Lucas Schmidt on healthy sweeteners. And he talks a lot about allulose and monk fruit in particular. This is a peptide question. I was prescribed GHKU peptide in injection form. What are your thoughts on this?
Is it GKHCU? It's got to be CU.
GHCU. Okay, that's probably my fault.
GHKCU maybe, but yeah, that's a copper peptide. It's got to be what you're talking about. It's pretty beneficial. You know, more. I think it's more beneficial in cream forms. But you can't, they do it in injectables as well. What people mostly use it for is skin and collagen. It works really well with reducing wrinkles and helps age spots, sun spots, that type of thing. I would use it concurrently when you're using vitamin C serum on your face or retinol on your face, or certainly at the same time you're going to do the 5-FU treatment, which I'm going to start tomorrow. I always treat my face for a couple of weeks with 5-FU, and it just blisters up all the actinic keratosis, and it's just a good time to do it in the winter. I do it every year because I've had a lot of sun damage. You know, I've had two or three skin cancers removed, and because I used to be in the sun all the time. Which the sun is good for you, but it's not good for your skin too much, especially if you've had it burned, which I had. But in any event, yeah, it's a great peptide. It's used for wound healing. It's also used for hair growth. A lot of people combine it with minoxidil to grow hair, and it's pretty effective. It's a really good peptide, mostly for skin. I've seen it more used in creams, topical creams, than I have injectable forms. It's certainly out there. It's a great collagen enhancer. It's good for vascularity. So it's a pretty good peptide. It really is, especially for skin and elasticity and wound healing.
Super interesting. Thank you for that question over on Instagram. We got one more question here, then we're going to go to live comments. So if you have a question for Dr. Rogers, go ahead and put in the comments for us. I see questions are coming in. Thank you guys so much. This one's I know it's going to be an easy one for you, I think. Can methylene blue cause staining in the mouth or teeth? And by staining, the way I am interpreting this is any sort of like permanent type stuff, because you know, we've all had experience with
it. Can cause permanent staining of your carpet, I can tell you that much. If your dogs get into it, you have to go get their hair cut. My two dogs got into it. I'll show you a picture of that at some point. Seems like we always get that flipped up on the screen, but
I'll get
your dogs get into it. Yeah, it could stain your, you know, usually what I recommend is that you rinse your mouth out after you know, swallowing it, because you, in most forms it comes in drops and you mix drops in it. They're my dogs. Well, there's Izzy. See how that got on her? She got into it.
they need
one haircut. Thing, she really focused really well and had a lot of energy for the next 3 days. And Ike even more so. But yeah, it could. So rinse, you know, after you down it, you know, rinse your teeth out and spit it out. But it could. It hasn't been a problem for most people. Remember to take vitamin C with it. Makes it work better. But I'm working on ordering some in pill and capsule form, so you don't have to worry about that, along with combined with vitamin C. I hope to order those pretty soon for office use. So you may want to look that up.
Thank you so much. It's a great question, and you know, obviously that is one of the concerns around it is the blue teeth. But thank you so much for that. That came in over Instagram. Shout out to all my Instagram people. I see Lori was in there, our injector. So good to see you, Lori. We're gonna get to live questions. It's time. We're ready for live Q&A now. If you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. And if you're new, just say hello. We really appreciate y'all being in here with us tonight. Like I said earlier, we'll be back to our regular scheduled time next week, Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We appreciate y'all making the adjustment with us tonight. Let's get to Rhonda's question on YouTube. Will you be getting the new shot Zepbound? And will it be more affordable? Awesome show. Thank you, Rhonda. What's happening in office with this?
Zepbound is just the brand name of Mounjaro that's marketed for weight loss, not diabetes. So, I wrote two prescriptions for it today. So, you know, it's something that we write prescriptions for, and you go and you get it filled. So the problem is going to be getting insurance to cover it. And I don't know if they have shortages or not. Hopefully not. I was told today that there will not be, but, so It's going to be expensive. Apparently, they're going to do some coupons. I certainly hope they roll it out better than Ozempic or Mounjaro or Wegovy were. Those are disasters. Great medicines for most people, but you know they didn't make enough of it. They didn't get enough coverage. So Zepbound is Mounjaro, same exact thing. So if you can't afford it, now I'm not sure. I don't have enough feedback to see how much people are actually paying for this. But certainly, if your insurance can cover it, I would go that route. If they don't, and it's going to cost you a lot of money, then I would think about ordering the compounded version of it, which is out there, tirzepatide, you know, which is very close to it. It's very effective. We used it. So it's probably going to be a little more affordable in that manner. But I don't know. We'll have to see. I've heard rumors that if your insurance won't pay for it, they're going to try to set a price, a cash price of about $550 a month. So we'll see. You know, jury's out, but it's Mounjaro for weight loss. It's the same exact thing. I have high hopes for it.
And Rhonda, we haven't explained this episode with Robin Riddle on Zepbound in particular. We do have you know, a few of our team in here. If anybody's seen anybody get a bill, let us know, because I don't know what people are being charged for that, for Zepbound, what the coverage is like. So I'll keep asking, because there's a good chance we haven't gotten any feedback in any of the offices, but I do know we have been prescribing it. So thank you, Rhonda, for keying us up on that. And I'll kind of, yeah. So Rachel's saying we haven't been seeing it get covered quite yet. Okay. But that is interesting around the price ceiling at $550. That's better than what we've seen with Ozempic when it's not covered. Like, I know there's been some you know, very unaffordable bills with that. So we'll keep you guys posted. Thank you for that question, Rhonda. We're going to keep moving here. Let's go to one step forward. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you. I'm going to cardiologist with a high calcium score. Is there a benefit over a stress test or coronary angiogram? Great show yesterday on longevity. Thank you so much for watching. Great question. One I know you get every day. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I saw a couple a day with fairly high levels. Again, it's a good screening test. The thing about a coronary calcium scoring, you can't really tell whether that calcium is on the inside of the artery, the coronary artery, or the outside. So I've had some people with a very high score end up getting a cardiac cath, which is a coronary angiogram, and it's, you know, it was clear. So it didn't correspond with it. So it's not a perfect test. Certainly, if you have a level over 400 in risk factors, you should probably see a cardiologist for at least a treadmill test, like a thallium scan, GXT, to see if you have any ischemia. So don't freak out about a high calcium scoring, for one thing. And certainly they have a CT angiogram, which is not a cardiac cath. That's a little different. So it's a little easier. So either that, either a coronary CT, or a, if you're having symptoms then, and you're have a lot of risk factors, then you could go straight to cardiac catheterization. That's the gold standard. But it may be if you're not symptomatic and you have a pretty high score, they'll just do a thallium treadmill test on you. And that's fairly accurate too. So don't freak out, but definitely see what it shows. And, you know, something I think most people should do is take a baby aspirin every day, and certainly watch your blood pressure. Don't develop diabetes. Don't smoke. Keep your stress levels down. Make sure you don't have sleep apnea. Get a good night's sleep. Look at your inflammatory markers and all that, and your insulin resistance. And in other words, get a Cleveland Heart panel, and then reduce your risk factors. But hopefully you'll be okay.
One step forward. Thank you so much for putting that in there. Great question. Thank you, Doc, for that answer. Let's go to Facebook with Linda. Have you heard of fulvic humic mineral blend? Can it be taken the same time as methylene blue? Have you heard of fulvic humic mineral
blend? Yeah, I have it. It's in that GI detox that we have in the office that... it's just a good binder, detox or GI detox blend. I like it, especially if you're having GI problems. But I probably wouldn't take it around the same time you took methylene blue. I'd probably not take it around any other vitamins or minerals or medications, just because it could bind to it, and you want to absorb the methylene blue or the vitamins and make them less effective. So I'll probably take it away from anything, at least by a couple hours.
All right.
So, but great question. Wonderful question.
Thank you, Linda.
The one I have, I actually has a little activated charcoal in it too. So it's a really good gut product.
Thank you, Linda, for putting that in there. Let's go to Velma. So good to see you, Velma, who's still working at 77. So good to see you. Can high blood pressure be related to bacterial infection in gums?
Yes, it can. So can heart disease. You might want to get that checked out, because oral health is just so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did a podcast on that one time.
We did. And I'll have to find that. It was on the particular test. It was on the Common Sense MD, but we'll talk more about that.
That's very good question. I mean, really, what's the bacteria in your mouth can seed your heart and actually cause cardiac infections. So you really probably ought to really pay attention to that.
All right. Thank you, Velma. Let's go back over to YouTube from DPC. What do you think of the blend of spermidine, PEA, nobilitin, being marketed by a well-known doctor? I might be totally botching that, DPC. I apologize. Have you heard of this, Doc?
I don't know what the blend is. I've heard of spermidine. That's kind of new in the news, but I don't know that particular blend, but I'll look at. I hate to say something I'm not real versed with, so let me do a little mark that, Ben, so that I can do a little research on it. And maybe we'll address that question next week.
All right, DPC, I've got that.
I meant to mention on that last question. You ought to see Dr. Susan Creech if you live in this area, because she does all the bacterial testing for your mouth. We did a couple podcasts with her, and she actually checked the bacteria in my mouth and found 3 out of the 5 and treated it. And I think it really helped me a lot. Sure helped my gut. So, you might want to think about seeing Dr. Creech, here in Kingsport.
Thank you for adding that, Doc.
Advanced dentist. So,
huge shout out to Dr. Creech. That episode,
I had a patient today who saw her, as a matter of fact. Really, really loved her.
Yeah, there was two
good results.
Two episodes with her. Thank you so much for mentioning that. Huge shout out to Dr. Creech. Let's go to let's see here. Kristen's got a question. My dad is having bad knee pain, and the docs told him he has the cartilage of a young person and can't help. Any advice on supplements or other he can come in to see you for? So this around knee pain, but cartilage is fine.
Yeah. I'll tell you who ought to see is Jill up in our Bristol office, who's been doing ortho, is a bone expert for 20 years. So, I mean, you know, just because you looks like you've got normal cartilage on your MRI or your maybe even a plain film, that you may have some, you may have bursitis in there. Certainly, the supplements I like are curcumin, turmeric is my number one. I like glucosamine with MSM. Chondroitin, I don't think helps that much. And, you know, Jill does a lot of PRP injections of the knee. She's done both my knees, and it really helped a lot. And if you look at my x-ray, it looks like I have plenty of good cartilage. I'm certainly not bone on bone at all. So there's something going on. Maybe it's bursitis. Maybe it's prepatellar tendonitis. So see Jill or maybe Ernie. Ernie's an expert with knees. And see what's going on, because something is causing inflammation in there. You know, it could be something he's doing. It could be his shoes, could be his hips, could be his back, could be his weight, could be he's doing the wrong exercises in the gym, like doing leg extensions, which is a terrible exercise to do. It'll wear your knees out. So yes, get a second opinion on that. And there are other things you should do, because if he's having knee pain all the time, something's going on. He's got inflammation going on. It just means maybe the doctor told him it didn't need the operation, but he certainly could find out what's going on with it and offer several different modalities.
Kristen, thank you so much for that question. I'm going to put this up here because one is just so kind and came across my visuals. Connie, thank you so much. That's so sweet of you. We love you back. Let's go to... let's see where I'm at. Let's go to Joy's question. Kathy, I got you. I'm seeing you come up now. What is your opinion on the stretch clinics that are opening locally? It's expensive, but is it needed? Worth it? Man, I'm glad this is coming up. I'm seeing stretch clinics as well. You know, I there's actually one I think in West Knoxville that does a great job. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, the stretch zone. My brother likes them and Andy likes them too. They've both been a few times. So yeah, I think they're okay. And again, before you go to them though, I'd probably see somebody like Ernie, a physical therapist who could, you know, evaluate you, because you could be overstretched and they could really end up, I had one person that made them worse, but, you know, I'm certainly for stretching, no doubt. They do have some training. They're usually not physical therapists. I've told Ernie a million times he ought to do his own stretch clinic. And you know how hard-headed Ernie is. I mean, I'm kidding, Ernie, if you're on here. Ernie's a wonderful physical therapist, great friend. But I would see Ernie or a physical therapist who can really knows their stuff. And get that evaluated beforehand. And then, but I'm not against it. Like I say, Andy liked it. My brother liked it. You know, they tend to have you sign up for like monthly payments and stuff. So I don't know that they're keen on, you know, going in as needed so much. That's the only qualm I have about it, is the way they do their business model. But, you know.
I've heard amazing things, and it is kind of to say that, you know, find something that works for you. And for a lot of people, you know, these stretch clinics are really beneficial, and for others it may not be. So thank you, Joy, for putting that in there, and great answer there, Doc. Let's get to Kathy here. I missed this one. Thank you, Kathy, for patience. Dr. R, do you think there is a cure for neuropathy? I have it from doing chemo, and it's very painful. It's really affecting my balance and causing me to not want to move. Kathy, man, I'm so sorry. Doc, I'll let you take
yeah, chemo. Here. Chemo can, certain chemotherapeutic agents can cause it. And a lot of times it gets better with time. Sometimes it doesn't improve 100%, but yeah, it's a really pain in the butt, but you can certainly use some medications. If you're thinking just over-the-counter vitamin B6 is my favorite neuropathy, you don't want to take over 100 milligrams of it, because it could make it worse. So the sweet spot's between 50 and 100 on vitamin B6. But that's the root cause, is that chemo. I'm sure of it, unless you know, have something going on with your back, or if you're a diabetic or something like that. But certainly I would see somebody like Ernie as well to look at some of the range of motions and things you can do. There's a lot of people claim there's a lot of cures. I get one popped into my inbox all the time by putting some kind of dot on it, the end of your foot. I'm not sure. I like magnesium, and certainly you can put magnesium on the, you know, you can soak your feet and use magnesium creams that sometimes help. Or you can use a medication like Lyrica or Neurontin. They seem to help a lot. Sometimes they have side effects like fatigue, weight gain. But, you know, I tend to like Lyrica a little better than Neurontin, gabapentin. But, I don't know if there's a cure for it, but there's certainly some pretty good treatments out for it. And it needs to be looked at. I hate that you're having this, but don't give up. There's ways to treat it.
Kathy, yeah, thank you so much for putting that in there. We're thinking about you. And I hope that helps. We're going to keep going here. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can over the next couple minutes. Leanne is asking, what type of diet is best for someone with Hashimoto's?
Great question. Gluten-free diet comes to mind the first thing. Make sure you're supplementing with zinc and selenium, about 200 of selenium, 50 of zinc. But I'll also leave out, besides leaving gluten out, I'll leave out any inflammatory food like sugar. Gluten is the main thing. Maybe dairy, nightshades, soy, and corn. I'd look at watching out for those. But definitely gluten-free.
Thank you, Leanne, for that question. I know that a lot of people are thinking the same thing. This is Dana's question. Would you recommend a food sensitivity test? I was recently treated by Robin Riddle for leaky gut and high numbers of bad gut bacteria. I always try to eat healthy by doing low carbs and no sugar, so not really sure what caused it. I have had high doses of prescription medication over the past year. Could that be the cause? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's probably the cause. You know, the other thing, we see a lot of it with COVID. We've seen a lot of long haulers with COVID, a lot of gut problems. Certainly the second time I had COVID, very little sinus thing, but a lot of gut issues. And I'm seeing that a lot. Even people that have no upper respiratory symptoms are having gut problems and they test positive for COVID. Who knows whether the tests are that accurate, but in any event, it's not a bad idea to get a food sensitivity test. I've done them. We do them in the office. So I think it's very reasonable to look at that. It's very interesting. You may be surprised at sometimes the foods you're most allergic to are the ones you crave the most. Certainly Robin's our expert on gut stuff. So if she can't help you, hardly anybody can. She sure helped me when I had my COVID gut, like I call it. But yeah, they sure could. I'm sure Robin has you on the right pre and probiotics. I put everybody on Digestion, which is my favorite gut, all around gut product ever. I get rave reviews about it almost every day from patients, especially those with IBS and that type of thing. But
one thing I'll add, Dana, is Robin did an Explain This video. She might have already told you, but there's an Explain This video on food sensitivity versus allergy testing. Or food allergy testing. And it was really interesting insight as to, you know, what.
It's different. It's different.
It's definitely different.
Food sensitivities are delayed food sensitivities.
Yep.
So it's not what you think of as a true allergy, but very interesting. Yeah, it'd probably be worth it.
Thank you, Dana, for that question. We're going to keep going here. Let's see where I'm at. I apologize if I'm missing people. Vicky's asking, can you take the shingles vax while you're on TNF blockers for rheumatoid arthritis?
As far as I know, you know, you may want to check with your rheumatologist on that. They may have a specific rule about that, but before I tell you yes, we need to do a little research or ask your rheumatologist who has you on a blocker for your rheumatoid arthritis. But yeah, you might want to check that out before you go for that shingles vax, which is two vaccines.
Shingrix. Vicky, we'll make note of this one. Next week, put this back in here because we'll keep talking about it. Thank you so much for putting that in there. Seems I missed. This is another one from Vicky. I know you can answer this quickly. Is it possible to get rid of kidney stones while they're still in your kidneys?
Yeah, they can go do lithotripsy on them. A lot of it depends on the location and things like that. But lithotripsy is just really strong sound waves. So they put you in this bathtub like thing with water, and it's painful. So they'll give you a blocker, to block the pain out. But yeah, especially if they're large and you've had them move and they get down in your ureter and they cause all kinds of problems. So yeah, talk to your urologist. They do stuff like that all the time.
Thank you, Vicky, for putting that in there. Let's get to.
I don't know of any supplement or thing to tell you that really takes them away with that. I just don't know of anything that works that great, from EDTA to some people claim that works, but it's just a toughie.
I want to put this up here from Lisa. Got an update from Lisa. Thank you so much for updating us, Lisa. I know Lisa's here every week and shares the podcast for us. I really appreciate it. Have only lost 117 pounds. That's not only. That's still amazing. She's hit a wall. The thing is, I'm feeling really, really fatigued, tired. Could I have depleted something important? The greatest thing is my blood sugar range 109 to 157 with no insulin shots at all for many months. Lisa, congratulations. I know it's frustrating, but you've done incredible. Any thoughts or recommendations on the severe tiredness fatigue?
Yeah. You need to come in and get a Cleveland. Let's look at all your vitamin levels, your iron storage. Sometimes when you lose that much weight, you can deplete some things. You have to also look at where you are with your diet and all. What your hormones look like, what your cortisol looks like, if you've hit a wall, but it needs to be looked at. You could have something else going on. We're seeing a lot of COVID fatigue. And again, about one out of four people who had COVID have long hauler COVID. And the most common thing is fatigue, shortness of breath on exertion. So come get the Cleveland. Let's look and see. It could be a lot of things. You could have depleted your CoQ10, your B12, your folate. COVID, if you had it, could have knocked your thyroid loose. We're seeing a lot of COVID-induced thyroid problems.
Lisa, thank you so much for the update. And what we'll do is we'll keep coming in and we'll keep talking about this. But I tell you
one supplement I really like is taurine.
Yeah.
I really like taurine for that. But anyway, get your blood work done.
Thank you, Lisa, for that. I'm going to put this up. Fred, thank you so much for this. We're hearing this every single day about Digestion. Thank you for putting that in there. I see Rhonda's got kind words. Thank you, Rhonda, for that. Bradley, thank you so much, man. Thank you for being with us over there on LinkedIn. Let's see Linda's question on what are your thoughts on Farxiga? Farxiga for diabetes.
Yeah, I like it. It's one of those that, what happens is it's a sodium glucose transport. So what happens is when you take that medicine, you pee out the sugar. There's a couple caveats you need to watch out for: yeast infections and this weird thing that I've only seen once, and that is an infection in the perineal area that really is hard to clear up. That's rare, though. So I like it. I'm not against it at all. Just look out for those things, especially UTI and yeast infections. But it's certainly, there's a lot of good evidence, too, that this class of medications protect your heart as well. So I do like Farxiga. I use it quite often.
Thank you, Linda, for that. We're gonna answer about one more than we're gonna call it an evening. This is around. We'll go kind of a two and one here. Wegovy, Mounjaro, do they both have similar gastro side effects?
Well, yeah, but I will tell you, Mounjaro has less. Wegovy is Ozempic. Remember that. Mounjaro is Zepbound. And I found Mounjaro to have less side effects and probably cause better weight loss, to be honest with you. But it's, you know, sometimes harder to get, maybe. You know, you need to be a diabetic to get that covered. Although Zepbound, you don't. It's for weight loss. So the Mounjaro, it has two gut hormones instead of one.
And that kind of that goes into Leanne's question, what is the difference between semaglutide and tirzepatide? These are the compounded versions of Wegovy and Mounjaro. Mounjaro, Wegovy, of course, is semaglutide. And I think I said that right. Wegovy, semaglutide, tirzepatide is Mounjaro. The difference is the hormones. Go ahead and explain that.
Yeah, semaglutide has one incretin, or gut hormone. And that's a GLP agonist, and it's strong. And tirzepatide has a weak GLP-1 agonist, but a strong GIP agonist, gastrointestinal peptide. So we have a little better results from it, to be honest with you.
We're going to take – thank you so much for that, Leanne. We're going to do this for DPC, and then we're going to call it a show. One, because this is such a common question, so thank you, DPC, for putting this in. What's the best remedies for better sleep and night sweats post-menopause? I think I know your answer, but I'll let you.
Bioidentical hormones, especially progesterone, usually takes care of both of them. So, look at your hormone levels, and that's probably what you need. If you don't want to take hormones for some reason, then like if you've had breast cancer, you probably don't want hormones. They don't cause it, but they could. You don't want to do it in somebody who has estrogen or progesterone receptor positivity. So you could try some things like evening primrose oil if you want to go all natural, borage oil. Of course, curcumin I like. So those are my favorites. But look at your hormones.
What a way to end the show. Thank you, DPC, for that wonderful question. Guys, it is so good to be back. We really value this time. One, I get to talk to my dad for an hour, and that's always a blast. So, Dad, thank you for doing this tonight. I know it's been a busy start to the week for you. Again, huge shout out to everybody at Performance Medicine, our entire team.
As we get back
into the groove here with 2024. Guys, we're going to do this show every week. We'll be here Tuesdays at 7. All year long, we're going to answer health and wellness questions, hang out. We're going to have fun. Thank you, Kristen. Thank you, Steve, my brother. Roel, thank you.
We have Ike coming on the show. Kids are... Well, Izzy jumped in front like she always does.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.